Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, my radio listeners. Getting it right with Dr. Bowles. I'm so happy to be here with you this afternoon. I've been going through a topic, social justice, and I had originally planned to present healthcare disparities in Obamacare last week, and things got very hectic and I was unable to, so I'm going to present that today. I hope you had a chance to take a look at it and review some of the information that I provided. You may stop and say, okay, Obamacare, I heard about that 2-3 years ago. What are you talking about? Well, there was a big controversy when President Barack Obama tried to get what some would call a nationalistic medicine program. His terminology was the Affordable Care Act. And there was a lot of information on his personal side of how his mother had a form of cancer that her health insurance didn't cover, or she didn't have insurance. And he talked about identifying with the everyday person who may not have insurance or be underinsured. Well, being in Louisiana, I follow the story very closely, and also being in the clinical area of medicine until recently, I am very aware of how difficult it is to get health care on the level that we are capable as a 21st century industrialized country. I know people who have disease in the state of Louisiana that rival that which I've seen in Africa and the Caribbean. So if you want to refer to third world country, I invite you to parts of southern Louisiana. Louisiana is ranked as the 50th state. That's right, the 50 states in the United States, we're number 50. I saw that statistic recently, and I received an invitation for something that goes on annually. Ever since I've been to Alexandria, maybe 2 or 3 times I've missed, I go to something that's put on by Region 6. That says closing the disparity of care for minorities primarily, but I guess they mean in general. And I have to say that it has been a dismal failure. You'd say, well, why? What's going on? There are so many reasons why it is bad and not functioning. There have been major attempts to rectify this, and I guess one of the most heroic I'm familiar with is when I came to Tulane for my residency training. I learned of something called the charity system, and this had to do with some nuns who had come to Louisiana centuries ago and set up as their covenant helping the poor and the deprived, and this spun into, unfortunately, a political thing where there were major hospitals, particularly in New Orleans, and I understand they're going to dedicate the new big charity very soon. I received an invitation to come and see what now is being publicized as the history of big charity. The reality is, in Louisiana, Governor Jindal slowly choked the life out of the healthcare system in the state by first refusing federal support for rural hospitals, and that essentially killed the charity system. And as soon as the indigent support system was dead, all kinds of business and urgent cares have sprung up. And if you walk in the door and you want service, you better have $110 or $130 in your hand. I don't know if the Affordable Care Act even affects these urgent cares. I do know that in my 15 years of experience working all over the state of Louisiana and in many times in rural communities, that were the charity system that helped the most people. When you go to Venice or Crystal City or into the shrimp boat and Gulf Coast type of fisheries, these are independent people. These are entrepreneurs. They don't have time to talk about insurances. I guess the biggest insurance on their mind is on their boat, and that may be mandated by the Coast Guard or something. But these are rugged people who get their living throwing nets in the water and hauling in shrimp, and they do it episodically so they don't have this really steady income, and they work these ungodly hours, 18, sometimes 20 hours. They're up before the sun. They're home after the sun. I have interacted with patients whose hands were so badly calloused and thickened, they say when you pull in the rope, you cut your hand, and then it has to heal, or you get a recut on top of a scar. So I know they're rugged, and they're fierce, and when they get sick, they will tend to themselves, as they call it, take care of business. They'll sew up injuries. And when I was in the community and they learned to trust my clinic, much of what I had to do would not be covered by Medicare or Medicaid, and there were programs in place before Governor Jindal that allowed them to pay what they could afford. And for those of you who have never heard of that, if the visit is $90 and your income is, let's just say, $7,000 a year, and yes, there are those who live on $7,000 a year, then your copay may be $2 or nothing at all. And they would pay people to track this information. I laugh. The bureaucracy and administration, they'll pay to make sure that no one slips through the crack and that kind of thing, but they wouldn't use the same money to supplement the services that they could be receiving. At any rate, I've had people come in with hooks through their thumb. I had to learn how you retract a hook that has multiple barbs. I've had multiple fractures, particularly of the forearm, where someone simply used duct tape to hold it in place till they could get into a clinic situation. I've had ER visits with eye avulsions and all kinds of unusual emergency. If I stayed with Tulane Medical Center, or when I went to University of Pittsburgh, stayed with the University of Pittsburgh ER, those are not injuries I was like. I'm grateful for the education that gave me. I have great sentiment for the persons who are that rugged and self-determining, and it pained me greatly to see a politician strip them of the kind of resource that was available in these very remote areas until we've now fallen. It was a free fall until we've hit bottom. To my understanding, we aren't bouncing. We are there, and we're stuck. We have a new governor. I'll see what happens, but 8 years of devastation is hard to recover. Louisiana, don't get me wrong, there are people who have lots of money, and there's people who are in great positions, and they have no reason to worry. But I'd say a good one-third, maybe even, I'm going to say one-third and keep it safe, that there are that many people who have no money, no insurance, and little hope. And if they have anything chronic, it has very poor care. Medicaid, even when it was in full swing in Louisiana, dictates how many visits a person can come to and get it paid for. So when I worked in the very indigent areas, I was doing an 80, sometime 100-hour week, and I was being paid for probably a third of the services that I was administering. I had to get very creative. I had to do group counseling. I had my LPNs and very few RNs, but I was training them to be able to bill for nurse services. Diabetes, hypertension was rampant, so unfortunately we had too many ulcerated injuries on the feet, lower leg, and stasis of blood flow. While this talk wasn't meant to be a clinical assessment of Louisiana, what I really wanted to talk about is how the Affordable Care Act was put in place, voted in, although controversially, but whomever wrote it had no sense of what the reality is in the areas I just described. In fact, they attached a big penalty on it, that if you don't register for this by a certain time, then a certain amount of money will come out of whatever they're giving them. I don't know if they mean food stamps or government aid, but it's a penalty attached to registration, which I just had to shake my head. Only a bureaucrat who's never suffered or never had a child that was too sick or about to stop breathing would even consider penalizing someone for not taking advantage of a controversial insurance care act that a lot of doctors have fled from. I have had a great education in Louisiana. In the formal training, Tulane has a wonderful system. I have nothing begrudging to say. The people I've worked with in the very rural areas have been everything everything that you could look up for the word generosity. When they had so little, they were still so generous. I had patrons to bring me soft shell crabs, and I didn't even know how to cook it, and I was told how expensive and how wonderful this gift was. I've had people carve things and want to present it to me. I have had gator garballs and gator tail and all kinds of what was precious to their community shared with me. And I am so very grateful. I met people that will always be in my heart and certainly have influenced how the kind of person and the things I know of people. And I was not disappointed. I am, however, strongly disappointed in administrators and bureaucrats and all those who strut about and make decisions and penalties without any kind of sympathy or empathy. That bothers me. Bothers me a lot. And it gets me in trouble because I don't stay quiet. And I've had my penalties and my attacks, and I look at the whole story with Bill Cosby and shake my head. Someone went after him because he was and is, in my opinion, a very strong black man who presented a very positive image of the black family, and that is not what is being portrayed to America in America today. And if I had to assess the end of 2015 into the year 2016, there are some mean, hateful people that if you expose me or you hurt my feelings, I'm going to get retribution. And that's clearly what I see going on in Flint, Michigan. I am tiring of all the news media capturing the various types of overt racial discrimination, and they keep pointing at it and yelling about it, and Beyonce's halftime performance. And I'm saying, well, when are we going to get it right? You know, analyzing the problem is not the same as finding a solution. If it is clear that the black American cannot get social justice in the paradigm that exists, then perhaps we need global intervention. I look at how often America goes over and weighs in on what China's doing and Russia's doing and Syria's doing and Kuwait was doing, and no one really weighs in on America, or if someone does, it's squashed. It's made into something else. Well, I may just be a revolutionary person in spirit because I got the double jeopardy card. I'm black and I'm female and I live in the Americas. And I do know what it is when they say girls can't do this, women shouldn't do that, blacks can't do this, blacks shouldn't do that. And I've heard it on all sides. And I don't just get it from the white Americans. I get it sometimes also from the establishment where there are men. So, yes, I think I come from a position where I can speak out, and I can speak out without trying to malign anyone or speak out because it's true rather than I'm trying to get some kind of retribution. The day has arrived, in my opinion, that it should be a global decision on how the black Americans can get reparation. If we can give back to the Vietnamese, if we can give back to the Japanese, if we're always saying we're sorry, mi kapo, and we come back with our pocketbook, we're still paying Israel $2 billion a year, then I think time is long overdue that the black Americans are given their just. You say, well, the problem is the problem. Well, let's start finding some solutions. I'm sure we can define the problems. We've done that all through the 60s, all through the 70s, all through the 80s, and we forgot in the 90s. And now we're almost flipped back to Jim Crow into 2016, and that's way back to 1920s. So we shouldn't have to wait 100 years, and instead of having progress, start moving backwards. Let's get back on point. What do I mean by social justice and healthcare disparities? Well, healthcare policies were written, as I stated, by those I think who are ill-equipped to address the issues that poor and uninsured people face, because disparities that occurs, especially in quality of care, has to do with the education of the physician. You see, I went to University of Pittsburgh. That's a Jewish establishment medical center, been there 200-plus years. That was my primary MD and some of my PhD training. Then I went to Tulane, where, again, a very established, high-worthy institution. Why do I mention this? I know how the doctors are taught to consider Black Americans differently. I was there, heard the lectures, I rounded on the clinics. I went to the Verge clinics when I was in Pittsburgh. It was in Aliquippa Street versus downtown Pittsburgh. I went to the Tulane clinics, whether it was down in the French Quarter or if it were in the main part of the city. There was an overt feeling of the residents as well as the attending physicians, blood pressure in Black people was allowed to be higher. A Black person came in with a 190 over 90. They were told you are borderline and you were given a certain medicine. If you had a non-Black person come in with that same blood pressure, they were given clonidine, 0.2 milligrams, and watched for 15 minutes, and the clonidine was repeated, and possibly there would be hospitalization. You say, well, wait, hold up. Why? Exactly. I have no idea. I was kind of schizophrenic in my thinking when I would have a downtown Tulane clinic and then go out into one of the satellite clinics where the downtown clinic, the patients were treated a certain way and blood pressure 140 over 70 was when you started to administer medication and you had them come back for follow-up visits with the nurse to make sure that blood pressure was managed and you gave them these detailed nutrition and food plans. And then I'd go into a satellite clinic where someone is 210 over 115 and you would get someone saying, well, stop eating salt and here, take this. And when I come back in 3 months, we will check again. There is a place in Louisiana, Providence, Louisiana, that I went, and I was totally flabbergasted. This was during my emergency medicine days when I traveled around the state. There were literally 70 to 80% of the persons in Providence, Louisiana, that were on dialysis. They were 28-year-old to 40-year-olds. With hypertension like 240 over 115. I almost went berserk. I had a young man, 32-year-old, who came to the hospital to visit his mother who had renal failure. I mean, she was in her early 60s. She wasn't really that elderly from the standard of today. And she was somehow unable to be on hemodialysis continuous unless she was hospitalized due to some kind of infection. And while we were talking, I was looking at him, and he kind of looked sticky or wet, like he was sweating. And I asked him, I said, are you okay, sir? And I had someone take his blood pressure. It was 242 over 115. And I said, oh, my goodness, if your blood pressure is not reduced, you will be on hemodialysis like your mother. This is terrible. And he looked at me, and he says, I already am. I didn't know what to say. Now, those of you who don't know Providence, Louisiana, it's kind of like Allentown in Pennsylvania. It had an industry. The industry died, and most of the money and corporate America moved out, and the people living there are kind of the residuals. They don't have money. They don't have jobs. Many of them are either on SSI, and for those of you who don't know what that means, they either have a mental incapacitation or they have some physical incapacitation, and they receive a check. And with so little money, because many of them are well under $800 a month, and that may even be high, maybe closer to $400 a month, they eat what they can afford. And as we know, and I should start another group of lectures on the nutrition in America and how politics has ruined that as well, and that's why we have the obesity epidemic. But back on point, they eat what they can afford, and too often it is supplemented foods that the government pay the farmer to grow that we really don't need. So you have your corn products, and you have very non-nutritious, high-calorie foods that they stock, and they obviously, if people don't have much money, eat what they can afford, and it's with a lot of salt, a lot of nitrate additives, a lot of synthetic and shelf life extenders, and consequently, they have the results, which is hypertension, diabetes, atherosclerosis, and cardiac defect. I worked in Lake Providence ER for some time, and I met the people, and every time I interacted and tried to intervene, if you like, there was no support. There were the medications at the time. Benicar was recommended as this wonderful drug for Black folks. There's been so few studies when you look at cardiological and hypertensive problems in that population, they did something called ASK. That's A-A-S-K, if you want to go check it. And it came out with a number of medications that seemed to work preferentially with Black Americans. They finally studied and said, okay, how can we fix this? And every one of those medications, by the way, have been removed from the market. And you tell me that pharmaceutical companies couldn't manufacture, which, by the way, you may need to know the statistics, the highest number of people with hypertension, diabetes, cardiological compromise in America are Black Americans first, followed closely by Latinos. And then if you ask, how is it we don't have a target medicine? How is it we don't have target clinics? How is it we don't have target foods? Because the people of color are not primary in the decision-making of these United States of America. So I've been there. I've been in the trenches. I fought the war. Do I just sit around and talk on the radio and complain? Absolutely not. I even had a to Bethesda and talked to people at NIH because I wrote some scathing letters and sent some emails because I'd gone to a number of the national conventions, and yes, I go to the PriMed conventions, and I go to cardiological conventions because I want to learn what is new, what is wonderful, how can I help fix it? And what I keep repeatedly learn is poor people can't afford the services. Poor people can't afford the surgery. Poor people can't afford the food. Poor people don't receive the treatment. So the disparity is institutionalized. If I tell one group of people your blood pressure should be 120 over 60, and then if you go and eat all of these different foods, I tell you that you can look out for your phytonutrients and you make sure that you eat avocado and you get some of this, and you know that what you are recommending would run $800, maybe $1,200 a month. And there's a person who has to live, take care of a family, pay rent, pay the same gasoline prices that everybody else is, and their full income, not their food budget, but their total income may be $800 or less, then you have designed a disparity. When you teach residents that if a Black person comes in with a blood pressure that's 200 on the top number and over 90 on the bottom number, now you can start some piddly little antihypertensive that hasn't been demonstrated in any study to be of any use in constitutively reducing blood pressure in this population. You give it to them anyway. I've met patients with 18 and 20 pills. And, for instance, the major medication they give Black people is hydrochlorothiazide, HCTZ. It has been demonstrated in every possible anecdotal way that HCTZ causes gout. Black men have gout higher than any other population in the world. But they give them HCTZ, and later they give them colchicine and allopurinol. So I cause a problem by giving you a medicine that's not effective in reducing your blood pressure to the normal healthy range. I'm just doing something. But in giving you this medicine, I know I'm concentrating uric acid in your body, and now you're going to have painful toes and deformed joints. And, oh, my goodness, now that I've created this new problem, let me give you a medicine that will help reduce the uric acid by giving you a mild diarrhea, and this will be the solution. So, is there a disparity of care in this United States of America? Absolutely. Is it a simple fix? No, it wasn't a simple orchestration. It starts with the teaching of your clinicians that Black lives don't matter, that Black health isn't as important. My last continuing medical education conference that I attended, and I have to do something in 2016 because this is in 2014, around November, I went to New York City, and PriMed is a big organization internationally known for primary care physicians. And I went there because I wanted to hear what is the Northeast teaching. And as you know, Northeast has Harvard, and it has Mount Sinai, and it has Penn State and other well-understood groups. So they had this big three-day thing, and I treated myself and stayed in a real upscale hotel right off of Times Square called Yotel. If you haven't been there, try it out. And I could walk from 10th Street to the conference area where the presentations were being made. this was such an upscale presentation. They had a holographic presentation. I think we exceeded 2,000 people attending the conference, and they had us set up in a room in such a way that they put on holograms, and regardless of your seated position, you could see a speaker. And it was a three-dimensional projection, and it was kind of eerie. It felt like you were in a Star Wars kind of movie, that if you looked to the right, there's someone standing talking, and you looked hard to the left, and that same person was standing there talking. So they had some money. If you say, what's the point, Bella? They had some money. Someone had money enough to holographically project a speaker, and the speaker spoke for 45 minutes and could take questions in real time. So that says money spent, technology there. What got me was there was a panel discussion, and the panel discussion in this case was a 62-year-old African-American female with hypertension, diabetes, and all the problems of my typical patient. So I sat up, perked up, ears sharp, let's hear what these authorities, these experts, these, you know, Mr. Everybody Stand Up, Take a Bow will say. And I was never so disappointed in my life. In fact, I haven't been corresponding to PrimeMed since. The austere people from this hospital and this Dr. Meredith said things that showed the institutionalized racism that I'm already familiar with. One person they asked to address the lady's HbA1c, and for those not initiated, that means poorly controlled diabetes if it's higher than the number 7. Hers was something like 11 point whatever. I've seen people with 17 and 18s. So I'm really dead in my seat. What will he tell me? And he began his oration saying, this person obviously does not care about her own health. And that was the first dagger into my heart, because they had given us a glimpse at the social background. And that's why I could so quickly say this is like my patient. They spoke of her keeping grandchildren. One was 7, one was 3. She did not have any ready support from her daughter or her son. She was working at the church 2 days a week. She was doing a lot of things typical of how strong Black women hold communities together in poor neighborhoods. And this person sitting in his high chair was looking at numbers and defining a person, that in his opinion, anyone with an HbA1c didn't care about diabetes, and he expected she would be on hemodialysis within a few years. And we were supposed to write comments and questions from the floor and submit it to this austere panel. And I could not contain myself. I wrote my comment and literally jumped out of my chair to make sure the proctors came and picked it up. And in my comment, I ask, why, PrimeMed, have you chosen these persons to address this issue? This is a real-life situation. This is my typical patient, and I may have as many as 200 to 400 a month. And all I am hearing is someone judgmentally deciding the person doesn't care. What does that have to do with the practice of medicine? That if you pre-decide that you have a non-compliant person, what is your effort level to right this pathology that is there? And I said, I feel this is a great disservice to the audience to choose someone of this opinion and look at him as an authority. Well, I did get called after the conference and told that they wanted me to come to some workshops. That's what they do. They try to placate you, make you feel important so you'll shut up and get out of the way. I don't want to be puffed up and put on a panel and get up and say, I give this patient to a fellow and I convene with my staff and have a social worker visit her, when I'm shaking my head saying, you are not in the real world. You're in some cushioned bubble, and you feel like you're the authority, and they'll go to you for your opinion when it hasn't anything to do with real life. So, yeah, is there a healthcare disparity in the United States? Yes. Do I think the Affordable Care Act is going to fix it? Absolutely not. Do I know what the solution is? I took my little piece, and I did what I could. But there needs to be reform, real reform, and it needs to start from the ground up. So with that, I say thank you for listening. This is Social Justice, Healthcare Disparities, and Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act. And I say take care, be safe, and until next time, this is Dr. Velva Bowles saying, let's get it right.